Support for Iditapod, a production of Alaska Public Media, comes from MVFCU. Experience the MVFCU way.
Basically, everyone said, don't go. And I was like, I gotta go. Like, I gotta go see what, if there is supposedly a trail, then I gotta go see if I can do it and see if I can make a move. No one else wanted to try that.
Welcome to the Iditapod, a podcast about the Iditarod because nobody else decided to try that, and where we ask ourselves, what would Ali Zirkle do? This is a production of Alaska Public Media and KNOM Radio in Nome. I'm your host, Casey Grove. Before we go see if we can do it, here's a word from our sponsor.
Support for Iditapod comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaska's communities.
Hey gang, happy Friday, and welcome to the Yukon River. That's where the front of the pack Iditarod mushers are arriving on Friday. That'll include Ali Zirkle, just heard from her. Barring any unforeseen circumstances, she will also be making it to the Yukon today, but it's Girdwood musher and last year's Iditarod runner-up, Nicholas Petit, who again leads the 2019 Iditarod. Petit's team, all 14 dogs, was the first to make it to the Yukon River, pulling into Anvik at 4:23 a.m. Friday. A quick note on the weather from our trail reporter Ben Matheson for KNOM. As the race enters its fifth day here, a warm winter storm is expected to drop a few inches of snow, and we might see temperatures climb into the mid-30s. That, as we know, can be a little warm for dogs running out there. They tend to slow down when they're warm. And the trail itself, if it gets a bunch of snow on it, will also slow those teams down. The teams approaching the Yukon River include defending champ Yor Lifseth Olsom. There has really been a cat-and-mouse game developing between him and Nick Petit, who, of course, were very close last year. And they've been taking turns in the lead. Olsom's team had led through the night going into Friday after passing Petit's between the checkpoints of Iditarod and Shagaluk. Petit and Olsom have been racing near each other ever since the checkpoint of Ophir, and they swapped the lead position a few times on Thursday as their rest and run schedules intersected. There will be more shuffling of the leaderboard this weekend. Mushers must take an 8-hour rest at a checkpoint of their choice on the Yukon or in Shagaluk, which is pretty close to the Yukon. So Olsom was first into Shagaluk very, very early Friday morning with 11 dogs. He did stay for that 8 hours, so he has checked that off. As Ben reports, wet snow was falling. Ben talked to Olsom after he pulled his team over for a nap and a nice big meal. There could have been a gourmet dinner for Olsom and prize money 25 miles down the trail in Anvik. It looks like Petit has claimed that. But after a hard run through the hilly terrain, Olsom decided not to pursue that prize.
If I was to do it, it would only be to get the money. You know, it wouldn't be the best thing to do for the dogs.
Petit arrived in Shagaluk 36 minutes behind Olsom wearing a raincoat, and he was out again within 3 minutes headed to Anvik.
What time did you pull in?
Quarter after.
Quarter after, and it's 50 after now?
Yep.
Okay. Ready, girls.
That was Petit urging his dogs on, and for being the first to arrive in Anvik, he wins the First of the Yukon Award, which comes with a 5-course meal prepared by Anchorage's Lakefront Lodge and a very experienced chef who is cooking much better food than what these guys have been eating, likely some freeze-dried meals and whatever is being served in checkpoints. This year, the meal that Nick has won includes bison chili, seared scallops, and a pan-fried cinnamon banana served with vanilla ice cream and warm brandy sauce. Wow. There's also $3,500 in $1 bills and a bottle of champagne. Little Dom Perignon, I'm told. Obviously, there's a lot of strategizing going on in this race, and it's not all about the food. You heard Allie talking about her drive to push from Ophir to Iditarod. That's where she took her 24. KNOM's Ben Matheson has more from Allie and more on the strategy as race leaders continue to leapfrog each other, preparing to make their next move.
After a marathon day on the trail, Ali Zirkle's team pulled into the ghost town checkpoint of Iditarod just before 2 a.m. Thursday. For being the first into Iditarod, Zirkle wins the Dorothy Page Halfway Award and the prize of $3,000 in gold nuggets. But she had to be the first to survive a trail that transitioned from soft snow to frozen, bumpy ground.
Yeah, those tussocks are hardcore. You shouldn't really mush a sled over them.
Zirkle's jarring trip was on a day so warm that she fed her dog's water from snow that melted from the rooftop of a shelter cabin. She explained her decision to be the first musher to travel this far before her break.
I gotta go. I gotta go see what... There's supposedly a trail from Ophir to Iditarod. So if there is supposedly a trail, then I gotta go see if I can do it and see if I can make a move. It seemed like no one else wanted to try that.
The race picture is beginning to come into view as teams surge out of their 24-hour breaks into Katna and Ophir. Zirkle's racing at the front, but her competition began to pass her Thursday afternoon while she finished her mandatory rest. Just after noon, Nick Batiste's team flew into the checkpoint with dogs that wanted to run more. He told spectators his reason for heading further up the trail.
Because they look like wild beasts.
With a fresh bale of straw, he drove his well-rested team a few miles further. Good rest is the priority for teams looking to maintain speed through the midsection of the race. On Wednesday afternoon at the Ophir checkpoint, a few hours into his 24-hour break, veteran Aaron Burmeister woke from a nap and cooked a meal. The soft trails and warm temperatures have required a big effort from his whole team.
There's been a lot of work. I mean, we've all been working together with the dogs. My legs are sore, my body's sore. I don't do much ski pulling, but I've been pushing and pumping and running quite a bit.
As mushers head out of checkpoints with freshly rested teams, the race is now on to reach the flat highway of the Yukon River. For KNOM, I'm Ben Matheson in Iditarod.
Mr. Ben Matheson and our other trail reporter, Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes, are turning in great interviews from the trail. We're posting a bunch of those as extended cuts on the podcast, bonus editions. Today, I'm working on posting an extended version of the interview that you heard parts of today with Allie. And there's one up right now with Nick Petit in Ophir from Wednesday. Nick was sounding real relaxed there while he was taking his 24 in Ophir. He talked about his dogs, their breeding line, and the interview includes a little bit about the two dogs he's running in the lead, at least up to Ophir. It was Shuby and Jeffrey, a couple half-brothers, he says. And that's a good lead-in to today's listener question.
Hey guys, it's Megan calling from Ohio. I've really been enjoying the daily podcasts and the bonus tracks. Thanks for keeping us connected to this exciting event. My questions are around the order of the dogs within the team. Is it intentional or strategic which dogs are the lead dogs? What are some of the qualities that the mushers look for in the lead dogs? Do they switch up positions within the team? Stuff like that. Thanks so much.
Thanks for that question, Megan, and thanks especially for the fawning praise. We appreciate that. Thank you for listening as well. The short answer is yes. A dog's position on the team really does matter, but it's not as hard and fast of a rule that a dog always has to pull in the same position, and mushers will tell you that it's important to have multiple dogs that can lead, if you have enough leaders in your team like that. I have to say, when you see these really professional-looking Iditarod teams, they look pretty orderly. They make their way down the trail, they pass other teams without too much trouble because they've been trained so well, and they're just the best dogs for this. I mean, this is the race for them. If you go out with amateur mushers, the teams maybe aren't as well trained, and that's just a fact of life. If you have more time to work with the dogs, they're just going to be better at doing this. And leaders especially may look back, dogs may look back, they could get jumbled up, they don't pass other teams as smoothly on the trail. So when you see videos of these Iditarod teams, just remember that there's a lot of work that goes into making things run as smoothly as they do. We're going to have more on lead dogs in just a second from Iditarod champion Libby Riddles and 16-time finisher Jim Lanier. They were on Alaska Public Media's live call-in show, Talk of Alaska, recorded a couple days ago. I was lucky enough to be able to join them. We might post the whole thing to the podcast here. I'm not sure if we have the space for that, but we'll find out. But real quick, let's just start with the positions in a dog team, starting at the sled. You've got your wheel dogs. Those are going to be your bigger, sort of stronger, bulkier dogs that really break the weight and get the sled moving right away when you need to move. And then you've got a couple, two, three rows of team dogs. And then you've got two swing dogs up near the front. They're right behind the leaders. And you need to train them to be able to make a big arc when they make turns. You don't want them to just cut off and try to run ahead of the leaders at any point. They really do play an important role because they're positioned right behind the leaders. And as those leaders make a turn, you want that nice clean arc so that if you're the musher on the sled, you can just kind of whip around the turn instead of going straight through. So As promised, here's more from Libby Riddles and Jim Lanier with Talk of Alaska host and my boss, Lori Townsend, starting things off.
Libby, what goes into selecting the dog that is going to be the leader? How do you make that decision?
You don't select. They're born or made, but mostly the very best ones just have it in their blood. I mean, they rise to the top, you know. It's just like you're the coach, and you have to see each dog and what is their best place. And, you know, some dogs are full-time leaders that could do every day of the Iditarod, and others like to have a break now and then. And, you know, every dog has a different capacity, and some of us are lucky enough to have these just once-in-a-lifetime super dogs like the one that helped me win the Iditarod, Dugan.
Well, I want to know more about that. In a while, we'll talk about that particular race. But, Jim, what are your thoughts about that? What are you looking for in a lead dog? And have you had one that really stood out from the others?
Oh, I've had several. As all of us who've done a lot of mushing and done the race a number of times, I guess the one thing you look for is a dog that's aggressive, that wants to lead, that doesn't mind being chased by a big pack of dogs, you know, and one that has assurance that he or she can do it. You don't want them looking back at you. Asking you, hey, are we done yet? Can I get off this
can I get
trail?
A snack?
Yeah. So those are things you'll look for.
So there you have it. That's how to pick a good lead dog. I want to mention, too, there is a really cool award in the Iditarod, if you haven't heard this already. It's called the Golden Harness Award, and it's for outstanding lead dogs. The Iditarod has the winning musher pick one of their dogs. Sometimes it's two. They take a picture of them with this nice wreath of flowers on the dog. I just want to go back and list some of the past Golden Harness winners. Back in 2010, you had Maple on Lance Mackey's team. 2011, it was a two for Snickers and Velvet on John Baker's team. And then 2012, Guinness on Dallas Seavey's team. Tanner in 2013 on Mitch Seavey's team. Beetle, another Dallas Seavey dog, in 2014. And then you've got back-to-back wins on the Golden Harness Award for Reef, also on Dallas Seavey's team. Pilot for Mitch Seavey in 2017. I think I saw a report that Pilot is out of this year's race and had to be dropped. And then a dog by the name of Russeren on your Life Seth Olsom's 2018 winning team. I guess that stands for Russian Express. And we will have to see who wins Golden Harness in 2019 when the teams reach Nome sometime next week. Speaking of major accomplishments, I've been avoiding this because I don't want to admit that there's another Iditarod podcast out there that has been actually in the business longer than us. It's called the iKidapod, and it's put together by a class in Wisconsin, elementary school students in Ms. Treptow's class. They actually have been going for four seasons now. This is their fourth season. Here is a little taste, and I am not kidding you, this is the iKidapod's opening music.
Hello and welcome to iKidapod Season 4. We're your host for today's program, Frosty Frost. Today we will be telling you what the Iditarod is.
It's pretty great, and a shout-out to Ms. Treptow's kids and the iKidapod, and congratulations on making it to your fourth season of the iKidapod. I mentioned Dallas Seavey's name a few minutes ago with his lead dogs. Of course, the four-time champion is not running the Iditarod again this year for the second year in a row. He didn't run last year amid a dog doping scandal. Since then, the Iditarod says they've cleared him of any wrongdoing. We covered all of that back in Season 2 last year, especially Season 2, Episode 2. I would definitely encourage the listeners to go back and maybe listen to the whole season, but if you want to know more about all that, that was covered in Season 2, Episode 2. Again, Dallas is over in Norway racing in the Finnmark Slopet. There was a point in last year's Iditarod where Yor was leading the Iditarod. He won, of course, and Dallas was running in first place in the biggest race over in Norway. It's actually the longest sled dog race in Europe. It's about 750 miles. And Seavey ended up taking third last year. And I guess that wasn't good enough for him. He went back over to Norway and he's going to try again to win that race. Maybe the best way to find out about Dallas's run in the Finnmark is to follow him on Facebook. He's out there on the social medias and on the internet. Well, everybody, that's about all we have time for today. Check us out at alaskapublic.org and knom.org for more stories and photos. We will continue the Iditapod here over the weekend as the race continues. We've also got daylight savings time changes coming up and some math to do. So stay tuned for that and more extended interviews from Ben and Zach out in the field. Hopefully Zach's going to figure out his internet issues in Anvik. Can't wait for that. Our theme music is by the band Sassafras. I am your host, Casey Grove. Until next time, happy trails.
Not to overanalyze the poop, but what are you seeing in some of this poop?
80% super solid turd, couple slightly running because they've been eating like wolves since we've been here. They've already eaten like a half a bag of kibble, like a whole bag, you know, and all kinds of meats and fats and stuff. We want them to eat as much as possible right now. Well, I mean, that one's kind of a wet turd. Which one made that one? Was it that one?
Has there been more fat than typical, or is it?
No, just I feed the same stuff all the time.
Yeah,
they're used to it, and I don't wonder how they'll deal with it. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. You want a solid turd, yeah? This turd here is nice. That's a pretty one.
That is the best one that we've seen so far.